And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Oh, hello and welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast. We have a very special guest joining us today, Charlie Ping, who has admitted online that he listens to the show, so I'm sure he won't mind me saying that out loud, but also engineers Agustin Canapino and has worked with JR Hildebrand in the past. Now, we've specially scheduled this episode in order to do it without JR Hildebrand so that we could say really nasty and horrible things about him while he's not here. Isn't that right, Charlie?
That's right, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the show. And yeah, I guess we should say JR's away this week, but we're hoping to hear some good news from him soon. We'll welcome him back for our post-Texas episode. But speaking of Texas, we have the first oval race of the season shortly upon us, which everyone is, I'm sure, very excited about. And it's lovely to have a proper engineer on the podcast to talk a little bit about the I guess the switch that some drivers are making to ovals, but especially Agustin, who's going to be making his proper oval race debut, which we're going to get into shortly. But Charlie, I feel like we'd be remiss not to talk a little bit about how you got into motorsport and your motorsport background, and of course your clashes with JR Hildebrand in the past. Give us a little bit of an overview of how you got to where you are now, working as an engineer for Juncos.
Yeah, sure. I've got a little bit of a varied background, I guess, but I started out in IndyCar. And I've tried to get out a few times and I always end up back in IndyCar somehow. So, but I started out, I worked for HPD actually when I started in motorsport, and I was a support engineer on the engine side and IRL days when there was still competition between Chevy, Toyota, and Honda. And that was quite fun, but that didn't last very long. With when I went to a spec engine formula, I moved to the Acura LMS program, which was also really exciting and interesting. But then the recession happened and that changed things up again. So I went from there to Conquest Racing for a year. And then, when I was at the Acura program, I moved from engine side to the chassis development side, which was a good move for me. And I found it pretty interesting and helpful to get in that environment on the chassis side and do a lot of vehicle sort of development and characterization and things like that on those new cars. I went to work for Conquest as a performance engineer and then went to Pratt Miller to engineer a GT car. So I thought I was getting out of IndyCar again, but that lasted a year. And when Chevy came back to IndyCar, I sort of got tapped to lead a support program for the DW12 chassis, which was new. And so that was another good opportunity to do a lot of vehicle testing, characterization, things like that. And that's really where I first met JR, because we had our Chevy teams that we were supporting, including Panther Racing, which he was working for at that time. And that program, at least on my side, kind of ended with the AeroKit era. So we had an aerodynamics group, and I was the head of the program manager of the chassis group. We had about six engineers, who some really good people who were helping the aero group decide targets for the aero kits. And so that was a really exciting project. And with a formula like IndyCar, it's pretty complex to build a aerodynamics kit that can do so many different things. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah, but I was kind of getting burnt out. So after 2015, literally the day after the 500, I had four suitcases and I moved to Australia, and I stayed there for 5 years. I worked mainly in V8 supercars with, I worked with Brad Jones Racing for 7 years, including some time after I came back here. So I have some touring car background as well. And then I came back to the U.S. I've been working with the IMSA team, Rubber Rock Racing, which I still am doing some work for this year. And then, but in between, even when I was in Australia, I came back to IndyCar a few times. I worked the 500 with Carlin, McLaren, and then AJ Foyt when JR was there. So that was, I tried to keep in touch with the at least the 500 to work. And that was, came in handy when I had an opportunity to come back to IndyCar. And last year I worked with Ryan Reinbold Racing. And, but yeah, this year full-time with, Juncos Hollinger and Agustin, and it's a good opportunity. I'm a little rusty on the IndyCar road course events, but I'm looking forward to the oval because I feel a bit more comfortable there and more recent experience. So I think that's the basics.
I'm sure there's no rust, but I'm sure you'll kick that off quickly. Just before we move on to Agustin and a bit more on this year, I wanted to ask you about JR because I obviously lucky enough to sit here with him every week and talk about IndyCar and his breakdowns of some of the more kind of technical aspects of things, or just generally his kind of you know, unique opinions and the way he breaks things down is always really interesting. But did you find him as a, you know, a really interesting driver to work with because of his background and, you know, how his mind works, how much knowledge he has of everything on the car, basically. But, you know, I guess he must have been an interesting driver to work with compared to some of the others that you may have worked with in the past.
Yeah, it's good to work with a technical driver, and I think it adds something to it when they can give you good feedback and they kind of understand what's going on. I think particularly with ovals, the setup is pretty complicated, and the way the cars behave is pretty complicated, and it can be, you know, there's a lot of things that aren't necessarily intuitive about oval setups. And so if you can explain that to a driver and they get it, it can really help out a lot. Especially during the race, you know, if they're making adjustments with their tools and things like that, that they really understand kind of what's going on. But at, you know, at the same time, when a driver doesn't care and just goes fast, that's all right too. I'll take those drivers as well. But, you know, when you're trying to develop a car setup, it does help to have a technical driver. And, you know, I worked at Foyt when JR was there, and I was on his stand during the race, but I haven't worked super closely with him. You know, through a season or a whole event, you know, as on his direct car, but certainly in meetings and things like that. And even when I was at Pratt Miller and we were doing technical work, he was always interested in that sort of thing. And you kind of always appreciate it when there's some interest in what you're doing rather than just thinking, oh, well, those are just the engineers and they just make everything extra complicated. And, you know, I just want to drive the car. So, but yeah, first things, you want a quick guy, and JR is quick, especially at Indy. He's quite good. So it's good to work with him for that reason, but it's nice just to have technical discussions as well without, you know, on a similar level. So yeah, it was good working with JR for the few times I have.
Definitely. Well, that's enough saying nice things about JR Hildebrand, and we should move on to do other things because he'll be listening back and he'll be really enjoying the segment. So we have to cut that there. But yeah, let's get into Agustin. You're obviously working with him in his maiden IndyCar season, his first season of open wheel racing, basically as a rookie in IndyCar. It's about as difficult as anything gets, and he's coming from a tin top background, which I guess V8 supercars and TC, not exactly comparable, but I guess kind of similar background. So I guess you will have known what to have looked for when Agustin came over and saw on his CV that he's obviously an impressive driver who's achieved some really good things over in Argentina before. And that probably instantly made you think that he's going to be a proper driver coming over. But what have you seen from him so far in both the early pre-season test and then his debut at St. Pete? What's he been like to work with, and how has that gone so far for you?
Yeah, it's been really good. Obviously, there's a lot of unknown coming into the team with a driver like Agustin. I think, you know, the whole, he wrote a good article with Ricardo and, you know, him saying he's crazy and he did a crazy thing. And I think that was probably pretty accurate because there's a lot of questioning that. And, you know, obviously at Thermal, it was a really nice surprise to see the pace that Agustin had and the team had as well. And I think that's kind of proven that, you know, he kind of belongs here. I was fully expecting to be, you know, us to be, you know, near the bottom or if not last in a few of the first few events, just as he gets up to speed. And I don't think we've been last in a single session so far. So I know that doesn't sound like super ambitious, but that's just kind of the level I think IndyCar is. And certainly I was in Australia actually when Scott McLaughlin was dominating in supercars, and I know what kind of talent he was. And I was, you know, I watched a lot of his progress in IndyCar quite a bit. and he's done well, but he's at a team that's, you know, in championship winning form, that's a little bit easier. So for someone like Augustine to come into a team that's, you know, Junko Salinger has been really quick, like in at the end of the last year, especially, but, you know, you wouldn't compare him to a Penske directly at the moment. So for him to, you know, to come into a team that's not a championship winning team at the moment and have the pace he's had has been really good. You know, working with him, you know, he's an extremely technical person. He's very mature. You know, it's a rookie, but he's 33 years old and he's won a lot of championships. So he's a true professional driver. And is sometimes the communication, I think, can be a little bit difficult in meetings when everyone's talking, but you put some data in front of him or sector times and things like that, and you can tell he's really switched on. He knows exactly what he's looking at. And so, you know, a lot of rookies are sort of immature from they might have speed, but they're immature, and he's mature, you know, full professional driver. So that's been easy. And his pace has been, I think, really nice to see from the whole team. And now I think our expectations have shifted a little bit now based on the first couple of tests and the first race, but that's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, at Thermally, impressed by, I think he'd set a couple of fastest sectors there in some of the high speed stuff and maybe the lower speed stuff, and learning how to work the tyre properly and get it into the right temperature is always going to be a difficult thing for someone coming from a tin top background into an open wheel car, obviously. But, you know, to see that he was immediately on the pace in terms of the high commitment stuff was really impressive. But yeah, I think the most impressive thing from my perspective so far is, you know, you kind of alluded to it a little bit, you know, he's learned English in 3 months and he's having this, you know, he's not only making this massive switch, like, you know, you mentioned Scott McLaughlin who made a similar kind of comparable switch, but Agustin's doing it, not speaking the language and having that to fight against as well. So I guess it must be nice to turn up to work in the morning knowing that you're working with a rookie coming into the series who is willing to, you know, change his lifestyle, uproot his life and you know, for this opportunity, and also to take those challenges that are placed in front of him and to really work hard at them and not just, you know, turn his nose up at adversity. It seems like he's really, you know, he's relishing this challenge.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's brave. He's a brave guy because, you know, obviously successful, you know, and comfortable where he was and coming here and being, you know, completely uprooting his life and living in a new country, new city, different language, all that stuff is pretty daunting. You know, I relocated to Australia, which in the grand scheme of things is pretty easy, you know, in terms of language and culture and all that, but it's still like, I can appreciate that it's not easy to do. So, you know, and there's a lot that comes with it, a lot of complications and just your personal life and getting, you know, accommodation and the bank accounts and just all these things that are, you know, distracting for him, I'm sure, but, you know, he's in it. And yeah, at Thermal too, and he's brave on the track as well. Like, I think I was really surprised his high speed pace is really good, and that's what you might think is the hardest thing to kind of work up to, but he's just right there. So I think he's even dialing it back a bit because, you know, everyone understands our goal is to finish races and not have incidents and things like that. And I think at St. Pete, we saw when he would fall behind the pack a little bit, it was when he encountered things he wasn't used to, like cold tires and getting marbles when he goes offline and gets passed. And he's been really cautious, but he still had really good pace. Mm. So I think, you know, once he gets more comfortable, it'd be exciting to see what he can do.
Yeah, definitely. His assimilation into the paddock, at least, has been supported by a lot of Argentinian fans, especially at St. Pete. A lot of them came to visit. There's obviously you know, quite a few people from Argentina who live in Miami anyway. But yeah, a great showing of support for his first race. And yeah, I know his old championship has as many followers on Instagram as IndyCar does. So, you know, he's definitely very well known in Argentina, very well respected. And I think a few people are going to maybe eat their words or at least be surprised by, you know, what Agustin's able to achieve this year alongside you. So we'll definitely be watching that journey. It's going to be really interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Just to move this on a little bit, I wanted to ask you about Texas because I know you've worked with, you know, young drivers or rookie drivers before, and you know, ovals are, you know, seem to be an area where you have excelled in your career as well. Talk us a little bit about how you kind of introduce a driver to an oval for the first time, especially a driver who's come from a totally, you know, road course background, because they're going to meet so many challenges, and even the data, the way the car's set up is obviously asymmetric, and, you know, everything's going to be a little bit alien when you jump in the car. So how do you kind of approach those challenges, and is there a kind of checklist that you could work through to kind of make things easier, or is it a kind of experience where the driver just has to jump in and learn on the fly?
Yeah, well, it's certainly not easy, and I wasn't able to be at Houston's Texas test, unfortunately, because I was in Sebring, but the guys, Steve Callum's engineer, filled in, and Eves and Zach were there. So that was, I appreciate they could do that for, since I couldn't. But I think, you know, you just have to try to give them as much information as they can, as you can. But it's really hard to prepare somebody for what they feel. And certainly I don't know exactly what it feels like either. It's just something that, you know, I think Callum could probably help Augustine as much as I could in terms of trying to explain to him what he's going to feel. But even then, I think after the test, he just said he can't even describe it, you know, like what the experience was like. So it's, you know, I think the main thing is sort of to minimize risk. You know, the worst thing that can happen is you lose the opportunity to get laps. It used to be, you know, when I started in IRL, almost all the races were ovals, and the drivers got a lot of experience with those. So people like Kanaan and Scott Dixon and the drivers from that era, they just have, you know, 100 times more experience than anyone coming to the series will ever have. We only have a handful of ovals on the schedule now. And there's, so it's just, you know, you want to make sure they complete every lap of the race and of the test and get as much experience as possible, because that's going to help the most. But yeah, it's just, I think you just try to explain how the car is set up, because it's very different than a road course car, and it's much more complicated. Even things like your tools might not do what you expect that they're going to do. You have a weight jacker, which you've never had before. And just depending on the car setup, you know, the bars could do things that they could have a strong effect or have different effects on entry versus mid and things like that. So you just try to explain everything about how the car works and what the adjustments do, and then what they're going to feel in traffic, and then work up to it slowly. But it's hard because, you know, you want to start out with maximum downforce so they get up to speed quickly, and then you want to bleed it off so they can feel the car, but you it's, you know, you don't want to fall off that cliff where all of a sudden they get surprised by something. So I think Augustine seemed like he got up to speed really quickly from what I read and heard from the team. And, you know, I think they could have trimmed out more, but I think rightfully they didn't really push the limits of that too much. But at the same time, then when you get, no matter how much practice you do, if you start in the back half of the field at the start of the race, which, you know, a rookie would typically do, it's something you never experienced before once again, you know. So having that huge back in front of the car and all that dirty air is just something that's completely, you really can't practice for that. So it's just working them up through the education process and trying to explain everything and then letting them experience it. But like I said, the main thing we pound into everyone's brain is just, you know, let's get all these laps completed. That was the goal at St. Pete, and he did a great job making sure he achieved that. So hopefully we can do it again at Texas.
Yeah, definitely. What do you make of the, I guess, the situation for a rookie now compared to when you started your career? Do you think it's more difficult for them to come in based on the fact that there's, you know, we have less testing now, we have fewer overall events, as you kind of alluded to, speaking about that specific era, but also, you know, the tools in the car and, you know, the aero screen, you know, I'm sure doesn't make things any easier on an oval. Do you think it's more difficult for rookies to jump in now, or do you think it's just been, it's always difficult for a rookie to jump in on an oval and it doesn't really make too much of a difference for some of those circumstances of the current cars now?
Yeah, I think it's more difficult now. There's just not as much testing. They do give you extra rookie days, which is great. And we've used two of those already. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's particularly for ovals, there's just such little opportunity to test on an oval. Most of the ovals, you know, Texas is really the only oval that you can test in for most of the year. And it's even too cold. Like when they tested his rookie test, it was much colder than it'll probably be on race day. So, you know, they used to race at Homestead and Fontana and there and Phoenix, and there's some other places that you could go and test, you know, during the off season. But now you really can't test anywhere in the off season, and the season's so busy that it's extremely difficult to fit in a test day. So yeah, I think it's really hard to learn ovals. Like I said, it used to be the majority of the season was ovals, and you had a lot of laps on ovals and testing and in the races. And now it's just like, you only have a handful of ovals, and they're all very different ovals. So for a rookie, like the first time you're going to experience a track like Texas is Texas race weekend, really. And the first time for Iowa is Iowa race weekend. And then you might not come back until the next race weekend to a place like Iowa. So it's, yeah, it's really difficult. I think most series have the same issue. You know, Formula One has the same issue, and NASCAR is the same issue. But it's good for the guys that are experienced because they can stick around a little bit longer, I think. And but it's, yeah, it's hard. I think it's particularly hard. On the other hand, there are different resources, and I think you know, there's simulators and even things like iRacing. I know Augustine uses iRacing and tools like that, and that certainly is helpful for learning tracks, especially street courses and things like that. You know, in 2002, I don't know how you learned about, you couldn't learn Long Beach until you rolled out there probably, but now you can do a lot of laps and at least sort of get a really good feel for it. I think that probably helped him at some of these tests to get up to speed more quickly, because he's just done a lot of, you know, virtual laps around some of these tracks. But yeah, I think ovals are the hardest thing. Indy isn't too bad because you have so much practice there.
Yeah.
But for the other ovals, I think it's just extremely difficult. It takes several years for somebody to get up to speed. But I guess the guys that can run those tracks and lights have a little bit of an advantage. But for someone that hasn't done that, yeah, I think it's pretty tough.
Yeah, definitely. And especially as something like Texas is so different to somewhere like Gateway or Iowa as well. So I guess when someone like Augustine gets to the end of the Texas race and feels happy with his progress and feels like he's nailed it, and maybe the same thing at Indy as well, feels like he's got to the end of the 500 and can be happy with his progress, you know, then you go to somewhere like Iowa or Gateway, and the sheet of paper is kind of torn up and you kind of go again. So it's an interesting one.
We'll get back to the pod in a moment, but first, a word about our partner, Grammarly. No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done, and Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. I know from experience that Grammarly can help you save time on any writing task and ensure you feel confident about what you've produced. In fact, 96% of Grammarly's users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing, and their tone suggestions can help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I also wanted to ask you if there's any particular driver traits you think kind of make a immediate good rookie sort of oval drivers, because I guess if you could draw up a driver with your own, you know, choice of attributes, is there anything that you think that you've seen in your career where if someone comes in with this certain attribute, the way they drive, or maybe it's their mentality or something like that, that really gives them a heads up when it comes to oval racing?
Yeah, I think it's for sure ovals kind of takes a little bit different type of driver, I think, and to succeed. Of course, some drivers can do it all well, but oval racing is really a lot more mental. It's not as physical in terms of, but it's a lot more mental. You have to think a lot about using your tools. You've got a lot, you know, you've got different tools available to you. You can also, you know, ask the team to trim and stop, and you can get a feel for that. It's also a lot about timing, you know, how to pass people, especially now with, you know, at Indy, for example, it's hard to pass, but it's certainly possible, but you really have to get it just right. So, Texas is going to be a lot different this year because there's a lot more downforce. So we might see a little bit more passing there, but you really have to think about, you know, what the car is doing and also what the car is going to do through the stint, and you kind of have to stay ahead of that with your tools while you're also driving the car, trying to overtake people and things like that. So just having some extra mental bandwidth is super important, and the more experienced drivers generally have that. And I think Agustin definitely has that too. He's pretty calm in the car, and he's, like I said, he's a professional. So I think he has a good shot at doing well on ovals, but don't want to say anything too soon before we get a race out. But yeah, it's bravery is important as well. You really have to go sometimes and reach right to the limit there to get passes done and things like that. But for a long race, you know, if the car has understeer in an oval, it's going to burn up the front tires really quickly if you don't use your tools to improve it. So if you're just out there driving and not really thinking about what's going on, you can find yourself in a big hole really quickly. So you have to always be thinking about, okay, like I have a little bit of understeer, I want to dial that out, and I want it so it doesn't get worse and things like that. So it's more of a thinking man's or woman's race, I guess. So that's the main difference, I think.
The bravery is an interesting one. I guess it's knowing when to use that bravery as well, because there's, you know, a fair bit of maybe etiquette is maybe not quite the right word to use, but you need to know when you can pass, when it's suitable to make a move. And obviously the guys are trying to protect themselves out there as well. So I guess there's a bit of an art to overtaking on an oval that's a little bit different to maybe what you would do on a road course. That's kind of an interesting thing to watch as well. I guess I wanted to ask you about Hunkos, sort of a bit more of an overview of the team, just based on the fact that, you know, you're obviously a very successful engineer in your own right, but you've worked for so many different teams and manufacturers and things like that. And it, you know, it strikes me as a team that, you know, it seems like a really fun place to work. It seems like you know, Ricardo has lots of ideas that he's not scared to throw out there and you know, kind of chuck at a whiteboard and see what sticks and what doesn't, really. You know, a bit of an innovator in that sense, but also just seems to back the team to, you know, go out there and do its thing, make mistakes, you know, not caution anyone for making mistakes, a kind of no blame type culture where, you know, people like Callum Ilott last season were able to go out there and not fear for their future. You know, they're able to just get in the car, know that, you know, the team owner has, you know, total belief in what he's doing, and he can go out there and perform to the highest level. And I guess it's quite similar behind the scenes with the team there. So yeah, I guess give us a little bit of a flavour of what you feel the atmosphere is like at Hunkos. And, you know, it always feels like maybe it's a bit of a David and Goliath team at times because of, you know, knocking Alonso out of the 500, and, you know, those stories kind of get bandied around a lot. And I know Ricardo's working towards you know, building something bigger and special here. And it's not about being the underdog forever, but what the team has been able to achieve is, you know, really special over the past, you know, year and a half, I guess. So yeah, give us a flavor of that atmosphere from behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's been really good. Obviously, I didn't know a lot about the team before I started. I did work with Carlin in 2018, and there's a few people that are, you know, have moved to over to Juncos when those teams merged or they bought Carlin out, I guess. And but generally, you know, basically, I didn't know what to expect, and it's been really good. I think the team is, like you said, it's a small team, but they, you know, it's growing, and the building blocks are kind of coming together for what we need. I think it's, for me, I've always enjoyed being able to kind of be part of a building process. And I think that's kind of where Juncos is right now. They want to do more and more complex things, but it's still in the process of happening. So, you know, I was built the, you know, Chevrolet support IndyCar program at Brett Miller. I was, you know, I assembled that team and that structure, and I enjoy that part of it. When you come into an existing team, a lot of times you don't get an opportunity to influence things too much. You just sort of get put in into an existing sort of way things are done, and then you have to really fight to change things. But with Juncos right now, it's, you know, everyone's really open to different ideas, different ways of doing things. There's very little politics involved. It feels like, you know, from Ricardo down, everyone's just wants to kind of do the right thing. And the goal is to just not do anything wrong, essentially, you know, and just, just keep building on, you know, do everything for a reason, keep building on that. And, you know, if there's an idea, let's try it out and see what happens. There's not a huge amount of pressure like this, you know, this year we have to win the championship, or we have to, you know, finish, and, you know, the expectations are certainly we all want to do well, and we're all pushing to do as well as we can. And like I said, that bar has changed probably a bit, especially for the 78 car. But my feeling with the team has really been great, because I feel like we can discuss anything we want. We can try anything we want. Ricardo's going to back what we do. He doesn't try to influence that. You know, certainly he asks questions, which he should, but you know, I feel like we can just get on with it and try to do our best. And that hasn't been the case with every team I've worked with. So a lot of times you really have to fight for a direction or a change that you really want. And I don't feel like that's the case. I think it's just very collaborative, and everyone's been great to work with. And it's exciting to kind of be part of something that's growing, and you can assemble it in the way you think is best. So yeah, it's been really good. And I think it is a little bit different than other teams, because it's just has less, you know, bureaucracy, really, because it's so young and small. So that's been really good.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's been fantastic from the outside, at least, to watch that journey with, I guess, Callum Ilott's front row at Laguna Seca last year being one of the highlights of last season, and obviously a fantastic St. Petersburg, where Callum was able to come from 22nd to 5th, and obviously Agustin had a fantastic debut where he finished one place behind the top rookie, who happens to drive a Ganassi car. So I don't think anyone would turn their nose up at that result. Charlie, congrats on that result and all the work you've done with Agustin so far, and thank you for joining us on the Race IndyCar podcast. We'll definitely get you back when Mr. Hildebrand returns for some more techie insight into various things. I'm sure JR's got a list of really random things that he wants to talk about on the pod to do with the tech side of IndyCar that he'll definitely call you up and have you come on the pod for.
No problem. Yeah, no, thanks for having me, and hopefully we have some more good news to talk about from the team side. So I'm looking forward to the next few races.
Definitely. Well, Charlie Ping, thanks so much for joining us on the Race IndyCar podcast, and best of luck with Texas.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, so that was Charlie Ping there joining the Race IndyCar podcast with an assist from JR Hildebrand. Thanks so much for that, JR, for having Charlie on, and I'm sure you'll be looking forward to speaking to him yourself later in the season. We did mention Texas, and Agustin is obviously one of the rookies taking on the race. We've also got Stingray Rob at Dale Coyne Racing, Benjamin Pedersen at AJ Foyt, and we don't have Marcus Armstrong for this race because Takuma Sato is back doing the ovals for Ganassi, or at least Texas, and the Indy 500. TBC on the ovals in the second half of the season. They might also go to Marcus Armstrong. We'll have to wait and see how that one plays out. Obviously, this was a race last year where Joseph Newgarden performed a spectacular last lap, last corner pass on Scott McLaughlin for the win. Penske teammates going for the victory there, so that was very entertaining. You can definitely go back on YouTube and have a watch of that again to refresh your memory. Don't forget to check out the-race.com for all your latest IndyCar news. We have a feature on the behind-the-scenes McLaren to Ganassi transfer that instantly paid off, the story of Taylor Kyle moving from his chief role at McLaren to Ganassi and also taking over the strategist role on one Marcus Ericsson's car, who obviously went on to win at St. Pete. There's also seven drivers missing from the 2023 Indy 500. That's after the news that Ryan Hunter-Reay has got the 33rd entry for the Indy 500. Yes, we're already talking about the Indy 500. It's already that time. We've also got some other stories to sweep up from St. Pete, so make sure you check those out, including the addition of Marcus Ericsson talking about his coach, which you could hear on last week's episode of the Race IndyCar podcast, which you should go and check out, which also featured Callum Ilott of Juncos Hollinger along with Charlie Ping. So that's a nice circular end to the podcast. We'll be back next week to review all of the action from Texas.
The Athletic.